Episode 8 of Welcome to Level 7, when Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Welcome to Level 7, the podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Welcome to Level 7, the unofficial Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, where we're going to talk about a television show that's so important to me that it's better than Lost, Buffy, and Game of Thrones combined.
Whoa.
And I haven't even seen an episode.
Whoa, that's pretty impressive.
You're hearing the voice of my co-host.
I'm Ben Avery, co-host of Welcome to Level 7.
Well, and I only say that, Ben, because I've never seen an episode of any of those shows.
Well, you've seen Lost?
No.
Really?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Ironically, I actually own one of the seasons on DVD because I won them as a prize. But it's a later season, so I've never even opened it
it's
up.
It's all on Netflix right now.
I don't watch a lot of TV, believe it or not.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I learned something new about you. I'm not sure how much I trust your judgment now, but I've learned something new about you.
Just have never watched it.
Yeah. And so we are actually talking about season zero of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Today's episode is about Captain America. This is the movie that led into the Avengers. This is the last of phase one before we get to the big one, the Avengers. This is Captain America, and I have to say that this is probably the one I was the most excited for, except for the Avengers. Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right.
Just a quick reminder, we're going to spoil every bit of this. This is, again, one of the more recent MCU movies, but everything here is fair game to us.
Yeah, we're spoiling every single thing in this movie.
If you haven't watched it yet and you don't want to be spoiled, just turn us off. Go find a copy. There's plenty available.
And it's on Netflix, and yeah, and then come back and hear what we have to talk about. Like I said, I was the most excited for this one because it was a period piece. I was so pleased to see that this was a World War II movie about Steve Rogers in World War II.
Well, the World War II era.
Well, you know what I mean. I was so excited about this. I was worried that they were going to try and update it, put him in Desert Storm or something like that. Not even Desert Storm, maybe something more recent where it was taking place all in the present day. And no, they put him in World War II and they froze him and brought him to the present day so that he could be the man out of time in Avengers. And I love it. So excited about that. The director, Joe Johnston, so excited about that. He directed The Rocketeer, which is tonally perfect. Joe Johnston also worked on Raiders of the Lost Ark and Empire Strikes Back. He's the guy who designed Boba Fett.
Yep, he made the character model.
So I thought we got a movie in good hands. The concept is taking place around World War II. This is the Captain America movie that I was hoping they would make.
One of my biggest disappointments is after this, it felt like he could do anything as a director, and he was asking for that Boba Fett movie. And I wonder if Disney had owned Lucasfilm back then like they do today, whether or not that would have been more of a reality.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, they're planning on doing some movies in between the regular episodes. So I wonder if it still could happen.
Mm-hmm. It's still out there. Again, he said he wants to do it and he designed that character. And I'd love to see him take it, especially after Captain America.
Well, and after Rocketeer as well. I mean, I enjoy Rocketeer. I think it's a fun throwback movie. It's just a good action adventure. And I believe it still holds up today as just a great action movie.
Now, and I've watched it recently in the last year and a half, and I hadn't seen it since it originally was released, and it was a pretty decent movie. It wasn't the best movie I saw. It definitely is a cult classic. Definitely a big, huge fan favorite in the Disney fan community, but I think Captain America: The First Avenger is a little bit better.
Oh, it's absolutely a better movie.
Of course, he probably had a little bit more thing called money. So.
And special effects. I mean, it's just a better movie. But yeah, knowing that was the director of The Rocketeer, they're going back to World War II, I'm thinking, great. I was pretty happy. So yeah, so where do you want to start here, Daniel?
So let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
With the Discovery, which isn't in the period. It's in our day.
Yes, it is.
We're out in the Arctic. Something is discovered, something big, as the snow and the ice shifts. And we see some SHIELD agents go out there, and we don't necessarily see what's inside this object, which appears to be an aircraft, but we do see a shield with a certain red, bright, and blue pattern on it. I do have one giant problem with this scene.
What's that?
Where's Coulson?
According to the comic books, he was on his way.
Well, we know I was watching you while you were sleeping.
Right.
Coulson should have been used here. Clark Gregg should have been included in this scene.
He should have, but I'm not too upset that he's not.
We have these unnamed SHIELD characters where it would have meant a lot more and made Coulson even more of connective tissue if he was included here.
Yes. Yes. But instead, you know, they're going to contact the powers that be, and I was okay with it. I mean, you can't have Coulson everywhere. Plus, well, here's the other thing that...
If he's not going to be here, which he should have been, he has to be in the ending where you see a lot more SHIELD agents out at the SHIELD headquarters in New York, and he's not there either.
I'm okay with it. Here's the thing. According to, again, the comic books and then also like an official timeline that I've seen that Marvel put out about the movies, Iron Man 2, Incredible Hulk, Thor, and Captain America, they all took place in a week. It's all 1 week of events. And so they did a comic book series called Nick Fury's Big Week. And it's all leading up to Avengers. And it's all basically scenes from the movies, seen from different angles and from, you know, the perspective of different characters. And so you actually see the guy who becomes the leader in Incredible Hulk. You see Black Widow, you know, shoot him with a dart and take him down. And you see it's all in the course of 1 week. So Coulson couldn't be everywhere. I hate the fact, by the way, that this all takes place in 1 week.
Yeah, I think it's
ridiculous.
It takes place in 1 week. I think it's ridiculous. And I do think that Coulson should have had a role here in Captain America very similar to the one he had in Thor.
Yeah, but he did that in Thor, too. And he was over there during Thor. And I don't like the official timeline here. It's all meant to be in a week. That's silly. That's silly. Because then he has to go from New Mexico all the way to the Arctic and back. I mean,
if anybody can do it, it's Coulson.
It's true, especially since he has a flying car. So yeah,
you hope so.
I hope so. And maybe by the time this episode comes out, we'll have found out that it is a flying car.
Not. You're not.
We'll see.
You're going to find out in season 4 that it doesn't fly. Because there's going to be a scene where Ward looks at Coulson and say, "Hey, is Lola one of those flying cars?" And Coulson's going to say, "Yeah, there's this guy named Ben who keeps asking, but no.
No, no.
No.
It's going to fly." Okay, so the discovery of Steve Rogers. It's a good scene. I was, you know, it makes sense. You know the vibe I got here? The Thing.
Yeah, I could see that.
The Thing, the John Carpenter movie, takes place, although that's in Antarctica, right? I think that's Antarctica. Sure. But it's the same kind of thing. Out in the ice, they find a spaceship.
You got frozen stuff.
You know,
it's dark.
You know, they're uncovering it. So
I can see how it fit that genre.
Yeah.
So we go from the Discovery to entering the period piece, where we jump back to World War II, and we start, of course, with Steve Rogers.
No.
No.
Why would we do that?
That wouldn't be interesting.
No, we have to find out what we're up against here. And so we go to Norway.
Birthplace of Thor.
Yeah. Oh, we're tying into Thor now, aren't we?
Oh,
yes, we are.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm liking this.
We meet Johan Smit.
Yeah, we meet.
He's looking for Thor's hammer.
No.
No. Did I even watch this movie?
It's wild. And here I'm getting another Indiana Jones vibe, honestly. I'm getting the Indiana Jones vibe of you have chosen wisely kind of thing, where he's trying to find out where the cosmic cube is, or the Tesseract. So, Red Skull, he's a bad dude. And he shows it in this scene at the very beginning of the movie. We know we are never going to root for this. Ever.
Never.
He's not a guy who's sympathetic at all. There is no gray in this character at all.
And he shows it early when he massacres a village.
Yeah, yeah. So is he too evil for evil's sake? Should we want to root for this guy? Should there be some depth to this character?
You know, I find that interesting because a lot of times with villains, I think it goes back to Star Wars. I really, with a lot of villains, kind of root for that redemption scene. And that happens in comic books all the time where you've got, you know, you almost get the feeling with some of these villains that when they turn good, was there even a consequence to their bad actions? Red Skull, I never was rooting for him to be redeemed in the same way. I don't know if you ever watched Heroes, but I always wanted Adam Monroe to turn around and be a good guy because I thought he was an awesome character. And with Red Skull, I never saw him as a good guy. Never wanted him to be a good guy.
No, he's just plain evil. I mean, he's a Nazi. He's Nazi evil.
Well, and see, and that's one of the things that I'll argue. He's Hydra. He's not Nazi. I mean, Hydra is a completely made up organization in the Marvel universe, and if you notice, they're really really careful that he. I think only the opening scene is the only one where Red Skull wears Nazi imagery on his uniform. And then we do have a scene where he's got like three officials from Berlin who are in Nazi uniforms. But otherwise, when you say that Steve Rogers is fighting Nazis, he's not. He's fighting Hydra.
He is. And he's Nazi evil. When I say he's Nazi evil, I mean, you look at him, you know he's evil. He's wearing things that makes him look like a Nazi. He's just evil, and he wants power. And it's interesting, you know, with Loki, you have a very – well, I shouldn't say very complex, but a complex villain who is not just a bad guy for evil's sake. There's some problems with Loki. Loki is a bad guy because he believes lies, and Red Skull is a bad guy because he just wants to be in charge. He doesn't care. He'll kill people just for fun.
His vision, a world made in his image.
Yes.
Yeah, the other thing, so he's evil. We're going to talk a lot about super soldiers throughout this. He's also the first super soldier.
Yeah, technically, and I was kind of surprised they did that with him. I was very surprised, actually, that they did that with him, but they almost need to for him to be able to go toe-to-toe with Captain America later on.
It reminds me of the one Captain America story arc that I actually read, like, the individual issues of the story arc when I was a kid, and they've collected into a collected edition called Captain America, The Captain, I think, or something like that. Captain America, once again, decides not to be Captain America, puts on a black costume. They come up with another Captain America. There's a shadowy guy in the background. And the whole idea is just to get Red Skull's mind into a clone of Steve Rogers. And so Red Skull and Steve Rogers are basically the same super soldier guy. So they can actually fight. And Red Skull can keep up. Because, it's interesting. It's very interesting. He is the first super soldier. Do you like that? I mean, the super soldier serum turned him into the Red Skull because it brings out what's inside you.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point that they keep bringing out, that it brings up all of you. And so when we talk later about trying to find that candidate, they're not necessarily looking for someone who's strong. You're looking for someone who's got good personality. Those things that we admire, because they would also be made more evident and stronger. Where in the case of here with Red Skull, the evil within him actually increases and intensifies because of the formula's work on him.
Yeah, and to me that's a little bit of a stretch too, that it makes you, you know, whatever's inside you, it brings that out more. I don't know how I feel about that. It works, but it basically – it turns him into a visual representation of his evil inside, you know. And it does the same with Steve Rogers too, where he doesn't change as much. But he becomes, you know, that visual ideal of, you know, what's noble and what's good. And I don't know. Should we talk about Steve Rogers now? The second super soldier?
No, let's go ahead. Okay. I think it's a good time. We're probably going to come back to some of the super soldier theme as we go through.
Yeah, now we kind of skipped over the actor who played the Red Skull, who is also from The Matrix and from Lord of the Rings. But
it's Hugo Weaving. He does an excellent job.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, and it's what you expect him to do when he's in a movie. He comes, he delivers. I think he always pretty much lives up to your expectations when you see him on the screen, if he's playing a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah. And he's a perfect choice for this character. That's the other thing is
– Well, the thing is you're right in the sense that you get somebody, an actor who isn't German, putting on a fake German accent. It could have been just corn, pure corn. And it doesn't ever come off as corny to me.
And the other thing about him is he's not afraid to cover his face. Now, he shows up at the beginning and he's got – you can see his regular face. But then for the second half of the movie, his face is covered. He was in V for Vendetta. You never saw his face when he as the character V, ever. He played the role. He got paid the price to play the role. And they never had to find a reason, like in most superhero movies, for the mask to come off. Yep. So with Red Skull, he starts out, you can see his face, but then it turns out that's his fake face, and underneath is the Red Skull face, which, what do you think about that makeup job, too?
It's just a hot mess. It's what it is. It's red, and it looks like it's inflamed, and that he needs a lotion. It looks like it's special effects. It seems a little plasticky at times, but, I mean, it's the Red Skull. You know what I mean? It's a guy who's got a red head. I don't know if they could have done a better job, but I also don't know if they could have done a worse job with it. I mean, it's...
I thought they did a great job.
It's a red head.
And it feels like his face still. It feels like you're still looking at Hugo Weaving. And, you know, it's almost a better job than in earlier Hulk movies where they're trying to get you to believe that you're looking at Banner.
Yep.
When he's Hulk.
Well, but I mean, is this the difference between a practical effect and a computer generated effect?
I don't know.
How much of that mask is a practical effect?
I don't know. And that's something I'm looking at it. Obviously, they're doing something with it because it doesn't look too bulky. It doesn't feel like there's too much prosthetics going on top of his skin. But I like it. I like the look. And it's realistic. It's that Marvel Cinematic Universe realism. Where, yeah, you feel like you're looking at a Red Skull, but it doesn't look as goofy as it would if you were really translating what's in the comic book. Okay, now Steve Rogers. Should we go to Steve Rogers now?
You mean Johnny Storm?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that kind of... I think one thing that helped is that they did the special effects to make him look small. And that helped me to kind of disconnect him from Johnny Storm. But yeah, he was Fantastic Four before this. And what a surprise to cast one of the Fantastic Four as one of the Avengers. It was very interesting to me. Did you feel like you were confused at all?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
It felt weird hearing the casting news just because he'd been another Marvel character.
He also plays them very different, though. Because this Steve Rogers character is an earnest character and a humble character. Definitely not the young hotshot that Johnny Storm is.
Yeah.
So special effects, did the special effects throw you off at all here?
I mean, I thought it was well done. It didn't seem out of place. It didn't seem weird.
How bizarre that they went the opposite way you would normally think. Because, you know, normally they use special effects to go bigger. And for him, they're using the special effects to go smaller, make him look like the weakling. So he can be built and buff when he's playing the super soldier.
Well, but I think it makes sense for this. Because let's be honest. They need somebody to sell this movie who looks the part. Of Captain America. They don't need somebody to sell the movie who looks the part of Steve Rogers.
Yeah. I mean,
they want a heartthrob. They want a movie hunk. And the Steve Rogers at the beginning of the movie is far from hunky. And there are no abs because there are no abs in his body. that's not the Steve Rogers that's going to be able to promote this movie.
But this is a situation where the technology allows them to do this and allows them to do something that they couldn't have done before. And in another version of this story, that if they had done it in the 80s, which they kind of did, is they would have used foam or whatever in the costume to build him up so that, you know, he'd be like the Batman costume.
But the problem there is I'm
or the Flash TV series. You know,
yeah, but I'm guessing that those guys still had some build to them.
They had some. Michael Keaton, though, not too much. I mean,
but the thing is I'll argue that Michael Keaton, compared to what Steve Rogers should be before he goes to the Super Soldier program, is a massive hunk. I mean, the whole reason that this is a dramatic change is because he was so slight.
Yeah, and
there's not going to be many guys who can carry that.
I'm not disagreeing with you there. I'm just saying that because of the technology, they were able to do this right and make him be the 98-pound weakling. And if this had been 5 years earlier, they would have had to found someone who was kind of in between what they want for the 98-pound weakling and the 200-pound, you know, muscle-bound hunk. They'd have found someone in between, and then they would have padded him with muscles. So that they could, you know, do the transformation.
Hey, I'm glad the technology allows them to do it, but I'm going to out myself here. Okay? So please don't judge me, fans.
Don't know where you're going with this, but...
Have you seen the last Twilight movie?
No.
I have. I'm a happily married man. That's why I've seen the last Twilight movie.
To stay happy?
In that movie, when I looked up from the book... that happened to be in my lap while I was watching it. I did see the most horrifying thing in the world, which was CGI Twilight Baby. Because they basically took the actress who was playing the child in that movie and put her face on a baby body. And it was horrifying. Completely and utterly disgusting. So you do have to be careful with that technology.
Did you see Benjamin Button?
No,
I didn't either. But I saw some of the commercials, and you know they basically did the same thing with Brad Pitt, where they were de-aging him and making him smaller and more slight and weaker looking, and it looked good. If the technology had not been there, though, this could have looked really, really bad. And considering how much time they spend with him as the 98-pound weakling with no shirt on, and so they're putting his head. And I don't know how they were doing it. I mean, I know there's probably documentaries about it on the DVD, but they put his head on the body of this really small, slight person, and it looks pretty seamless. It looks really good. It makes the transformation that much greater when they pump him full of energy or whatever it was. It wasn't drugs. They weren't pumping him full of drugs. No. It wasn't drugs, though. It wasn't steroids.
Vitamins are like vitamins.
Yeah. They pump him full of that, and the thing opens, and you see him, and you see his cut abs and, you know, his guns. I mean, this is an awesome, perfect transformation.
It looks clean. It looks good. So now, what do you think of Steve Rogers, the character?
Well, that's what I just wanted to get into here is... They could have done this as a joke. They could have done his character, and they kind of do I mean, they make jokes out of it, but he's not a joke. He is an earnest character, and he really wants to do good. And this could be played so many ways, and considering the cynical nature of, like, a Tony Stark, you know, which is very, very popular. At this point in time, you've got, you know, the Iron Man movies. You've got Robert Downey Jr. Here you have a character who just wants to fight in the war because he doesn't like the bad things that are happening in Europe. And he wants to be a part of changing that and doing, you know, and making the change.
Well, and it's not just he's against injustice because his quote is, I don't want to kill anyone. I just don't like bullies wherever they're from. And you get the sense of he doesn't like the bullies that are in Europe. He doesn't like the bullies that are in the Pacific.
He doesn't like the bullies down the street. Yeah.
That he just does not like bullies. And part of that is the fact that he's been bullied his entire life. But it is something – he's got a very distinct sense of justice and right and wrong. And you're right in the fact to bring up Tony Stark, because when we get to the Avengers, you do have those very, very sharp contrasts of characters where you've got the very sincere, the very upright Steve Rogers. And then you've got the Tony Stark who's got to make a joke in the situation. And when he does, they still, even though they're very, very different people, they still can come together, which is a great part of that story. And even though the great struggle of what exactly is Nick Fury's secret, they're both able to, in different ways, to piece it together.
Yeah, and of course we'll talk about that in our next episode. But this is a very, very hard line to walk, though. Where you're trying to tell a story about this earnest, sincere person who wants what's right. He wants justice. He wants what's right. And that's not a popular character type. And, you know, how many of our, I mean, they did it with Superman. They did it with Christopher Reeve. Christopher Reeve as Superman made you want to, you know, do and be a better person. And even in Superman 3 and Superman 4, they're watchable because Christopher Reeve is on the screen. And he is Superman, and he really is the Boy Scout. But in other situations where you have heroes, it comes off as just a joke. And even when it's not meant to be, especially when it's not meant to be, it becomes ironic, or it becomes, you know, just ridiculous. And so they walked the line, and I feel like they really did an incredible job of presenting a character who is not at all what you would want to see or what you would normally see in a modern movie.
And the other surprising thing is it's a very, very different character than Johnny Storm.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I was able to make the clear line, the clear, you know, that's Johnny Storm and this is Steve Rogers. It's two different characters and barely the same actor because he's doing it in two different ways. So, yeah, I'm liking Steve Rogers. I'm liking what he stands for. He is a heroic character. And the scene that sells me on it, there's two things when they're testing people to see if they're going to be worthy of the super soldier treatment. And there's the one scene where he's clever enough to knock down the flagpole and get the flag down, and no one else has ever done that in, you know, however many years of training, and he's just using his brain instead of using his brawn like everyone else. And the other scene is the grenade. I love that grenade scene and the way that Chris Evans plays that grenade scene, where the grenade gets thrown into the training ground, someone yells grenade, everyone else runs away. He runs to the grenade, jumps on the grenade. And that's when I'm like, yes, this is a movie about a hero. This is something very different from a lot of other movies I've seen. Yeah. It's great. I love this character. I love it.
So you can't have a Steve Rogers if you don't have a... I want to back up real quick. I want to talk one more thing about these two, about Red Skull and about Steve Rogers. And that's Super Soldier Program.
Okay.
Because I think that when you look at especially the Marvel Ultimate Universe, the idea of the Super Soldier Program is hanging over almost every story in that Ultimate Universe, where so much of the technology and so many of the heroes that you see are trying to reproduce the Super Soldier Program and the success with Captain America. You look at the Hulk movie here in the MCU, you get a little bit of a sense there that it is trying to, you know, maybe that's trying to recapture Super Soldier. But one of the things that struck me, and I know we'll talk about this more in depth later, is you've got me reading these MCU crossover comics.
Yeah.
And it, in one of those, I believe it's the Hulk one, talks – actually, it's either the Hulk or the Iron Man one talks about having to reclaim, redo the Super Soldier program. So this idea of heroes and being able to artificially create them is kind of permeating into the MCU.
Yeah, I here's another episode idea for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because did you know that Man-Thing's origin was he was trying to reproduce the Super Soldier program or serum? The Ted Salas, the scientist, he was trying to reproduce the Super Soldier serum and it fell in the swamp with him during an explosion. And so out came Man-Thing. It's tied into the Super Soldier Serum. So, I don't know if I want to see an episode about that in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it totally could be. Totally could be.
Yeah. No, and easily they could do it. Easily.
So, and one more thing with Steve Rogers and Red Skull is with both of these guys, you have very extreme... You have the extreme villain and the extreme hero. The one thing that they do is they build the hero character. He has a lot more motivation behind him. And he, you know, you see his character coming from his experience far more than you do with Red Skull. And I like that. But they are definitely – you have a villain and a hero who are evenly matched as far as their powers go. And as far as their worldviews go, they're very much the opposite of each other.
Absolutely.
And it works. I think it works.
All right. So I think we can jump to Robin now. I mean, Bucky.
Yeah, this is the one problem I have with this movie.
Lay it on me, brother.
I'm okay with it for the most part. They couldn't have Bucky be a child sidekick because in the original comic books, it was Captain America and Bucky, and they were basically Batman and Robin. Think how ridiculous this is because basically you have a super-powered super soldier and his kid sidekick who, as far as I know, didn't have any powers at all.
No.
And they're going off on missions fighting Nazis and giant robots and stuff like that. If you think about, you know, from a realistic standpoint, you're going to have some problems there.
Well, so it's what you're pulling on there is when you and I'm not talking about Winter Soldier. I'm talking about Bucky.
Right. We are talking about the character of Bucky.
And when you look at the recollections that you see in the comic universe of Bucky, it is always exactly what you're saying. Unpowered kid, youngster. Almost Robin-like in the sense that he's being trained by Batman, I mean Captain America. So he may have some skills in a fighting skill set, but it's not like he's got the serum in it. It's not like he's got anything extraordinary other than being under the instruction of Steve Rogers.
But so this is a time, though, when you had to have the teenage sidekick because he's the character. You know, I never wanted to be Robin. I always wanted to be Batman. But I think the thinking was, okay, we'll put a kid in there. Kids already look up to Batman, so they're going to relate to Robin as this kid who looks up to Batman. And Batman is like his father figure. And wouldn't you like to have Batman as your father? No. Answer is no. I wouldn't mind having Captain America as my father, but not if he's taking me into battle when I'm 11 years old and all I have is a domino mask to protect myself against bad guys. So the problem that I have with Bucky in the movie, though, they have to age him. He has to be old enough to actually be a soldier.
Well, and but, it's not even that he's a soldier. It's now he's the mentor, well, per se.
That's my problem. That's my problem right there, 100%. The relationship between Steve and Bucky is that Bucky is the older one, or feels like the older one. Bucky is definitely the alpha male in the relationship. You know, he's the one. Steve is trying to be like Bucky. And instead of the other way around, I feel like it should have been the other way around. I feel like I don't know how they would have done it in the earlier scenes, but Bucky, when they're in the theater of war, should have been someone who's looking at Steve Rogers as a mentor and as an inspiration.
And well, I mean, when you get to
he kind of becomes that, but yeah. It's not as realistic because earlier on, Bucky was the one who, you know, Steve wants to be like him. And I didn't like this. I don't normally complain about changes to the originals, but this is one where I do kind of, I don't like the change. It works from a story perspective. And if it wasn't, if the guy wasn't named Bucky, it wouldn't be as much of a problem for me.
And I do like Sebastian Stan's portrayal here as an actor.
Yeah, Sebastian Stan plays a great big brother.
And I'm excited, and I do think he will do a very good job matching up with Winter Soldier. I do think he'll be able to pull that role off.
Yes, absolutely. And it's a friendship, and that's cool. In Winter Soldier, you're going to have two friends going into battle against each other, but it just, I didn't like the change. I feel like, again, I don't know how they could have had Bucky and Steve Rogers be friends in the earlier scenes without Bucky feeling like he's the big brother, he's the mentor, because Steve Rogers has to be the 98-pound weakling who wouldn't, you know, no one would follow. So if you're going to establish that friendship at the beginning, it had to feel like this, but I think it's the one misstep for me.
That, but I do think that if they'd gone a different direction with that role, they may have to have cast somebody else as Winter Soldier. And I probably would have been okay with that.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah.
Because Winter Soldier and the Bucky of the comic books do look very, very different to me.
Because he's aged.
And some muscle.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're talking, you know, decades, so.
He's had the Barry Bonds treatment.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah, Bucky, by the way, then dies. And because of that friendship stuff earlier on, you do feel Steve Rogers' pain. There's pain there. It's not so much that Steve Rogers feels that it's his fault, though, or at least I don't feel like it's his fault so much. In the comic books, you do feel like it's his fault.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you did. It seems like a freak accident. Bucky's death is getting Boba Fetted to me, where you have a character of significance who kind of has this quick death. So that's, you know, he's off quick, you know?
Yeah. We got some other major characters here, like
Walt Disney.
Walt Disney. He's not so Disney in this movie.
No, he's not very Disney in this one. He is more Tony in this one.
He's absolutely Tony in this one. I'm very surprised that they play him as Robert Downey Jr. I feel like he's a 40s version of Robert Downey Jr.
It's exactly what he is from the. I mean, when you look at Iron Man 2, where you've got the opening sequence where he's got the dancing girls at the Stark Expo, and you look here, and he's at an expo, and he's showing off his wares, and he's got dancing girls with him.
And
very much Tony.
What are his wares? It's Nora, the flying car that doesn't fly very well.
But he's working
Nora.
On
Nora! Yay!
I mean, someday he'll be able to give S.H.I.E.L.D. a working flying car.
Yeah.
Just not today.
So it is very interesting how Howard Stark in this movie is so much like Tony Stark in Iron Man 2, and so much not like Howard Stark in Iron Man 2. They're taking that Iron Man 2 vibe, but they're kind of leaving other parts of Iron Man 2 behind. It's interesting.
Yeah. Well, he at one point somebody makes the comment that he's the best mechanical engineer in the country. Is that not what Tony Stark is in our day and age?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, Howard Stark in Iron Man 2, this is 30 years older than Howard Stark in World War 2. So there's 30 years between those, but it is, I like him a lot. And he's the Howard Stark. He's playing Howard Stark in the Agent Carter one shot.
Correct.
So that'll be good. I like him, and it's a great character, but it is an interesting, like, there is a story in between, you know, those 30 years do something to him to make him not so much the cocky, and I feel like he's a womanizer.
And you could definitely see in Iron Man 2, you get that comment that Howard Stark was one of the people that helped founded S.H.I.E.L.D. And if you look at the scientific strategic reserve as kind of being that precursor to S.H.I.E.L.D., and he's their best scientific/mechanical mind, it's not a difficult jump to see, oh, I could see how Howard went from the SSR to S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, yeah. And there are some comic book stories with the Captain America, the First Avenger. No, the First Vengeance is what they call the comic books. It's a 4-issue miniseries or 8-issue digital series or something like that, but they collected it into one book. And you see Howard Stark get recruited into the SSR, and you see why he's willing to do that, even though he'd much rather be, you know, having his own adventures with women and you know, inventing things that are going to make him rich and popular. So, and I, of all the comic books that go along with these movies, I recommend Captain America, the First Vengeance, probably the most, because it actually adds extra things to the characters rather than just retelling events from different points of view and stuff like that. But, you see some Howard Stark stuff there. It's cool. Cool. So Dr. Erskine?
Yeah, yeah. You mean Wernher von Braun?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, when you look at the von Braun story, it's very similar in the fact that, you know, von Braun was tapped on the shoulder to come build rockets, where Erskine here was tapped on the shoulder to build the super soldier serum.
Yeah, so do you think this is on purpose, or do you think this is just them using cliche movie tropes?
I think his death is cliched. You know, I think that this is an actual attempt to try to reach out to historical precedents and looking at something like the von Braun and the German scientists that before and after World War II did emigrate to countries like Great Britain and the United States. I think this is kind of a shout out to that historical trend, to be honest, is my feeling. I mean, I don't feel like it's necessarily manufactured for the movie, but I do feel it's very convenient for the movie.
It fits with the origin story of Captain America, too. I mean, this is a part of the Captain America mythology, is that the scientist who is keeping this serum in his brain dies, and so there will never be another replication of the super soldier serum. Now, here's the other thing I have to ask you. Do you find there to be an interesting parallel between Dr. Erskine and the character who's in the cave with Tony Stark in Iron Man 1?
I had not thought about that, but I mean, they both push their hero to be better people and to be better heroes. They're both key in activating them into being a hero.
And they both die.
To be honest, both Iron Man and Captain America are trying to live up to the sacrifice of that death. So, yeah, I definitely can see that.
And both die at the very beginning of a great big exciting action sequence as the heroes are just testing out their powers and their limitations. With Tony Stark in really badly made armor and Captain America in an awesome scene where he's figuring out how his powers work. I love the scene after Dr. Erskine dies. I don't love Dr. Erskine dying necessarily, but yeah, so you have it's the mentor who dies. It's Yoda. It's Obi-Wan.
Wait, whoa. Obi-Wan died?
Yeah, didn't he?
Spoilers.
Spoilers back to 1977. I think we're okay spoiling that, right?
All right. Well, you know, there's one other person that was part of this super soldier program.
And that is?
Two-Face. Colonel Chester Phillips. Sorry, I had to do it. But Colonel Phillips, I find this interesting because you get the sense that Phillips is fighting against Steve Rogers and Captain America throughout this entire movie. Where if you look at the origin as it stands now, Phillips is part of that origin in the comic books, but he's one of the people that helps pick Rogers to be Captain America.
Yeah, he's the gruff. He's the gruff commanding officer that you need to have in any war movie, especially action war movies, where it's not meant to be, you know, tugging at your heartstrings by showing you this horrible war. Instead, you have Tommy Lee Jones, who you gotta love him. It's a great portrayal. I enjoy watching
him. He does a great job portraying Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, yeah. And he does a great job of, you know, not being too happy with this kid who's thrust into his midst. I like Tommy Lee Jones, so I like this character. If you don't like Tommy Lee Jones, you won't like this guy.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. So there's one other member of the SSR we need to discuss.
Yeah. We talking Agent Carter now?
We're talking Agent Carter.
Agent Carter, who is not American.
Nope.
She's British and gets brought up a few times, but she's an interesting character. I like her.
She's struggling to be a woman in a man's world.
Yeah, yeah. And she is kind of the love interest for Steve Rogers. Does this work for you?
Though well, I'm sad because they never danced.
That's true. But does the romance work for you?
The thing is really Evans plays Steve Rogers as so sincere and such a clean-cut kid. I do find a romance in which there is no contact physically, which is very unlike many movies that you see nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
One that is on a very, very high ground in moral fiber, I find it very believable.
I guess it's so weird because the relationship starts out where they're not equals. You know, he's this kid who's like, I got beat up there. I got beat up there. And she, in a similar way to Bucky, you know, she's much older. She's this older sister, or she's this older woman. And maybe she's not even older, but she feels older and has experienced more of the world.
And I think that's the word, experienced. She's more experienced.
Yeah.
And I mean, so, unlike Steve Rogers, she's come across an ocean. I mean.
And she is doing this part in the war where she's, you know, part of the SSR. She's obviously got some experience doing some, not necessarily fighting, but she's got experience in this war. And, you know, the thing about Bucky being like the older brother at the beginning and that friendship at the beginning, it really works toward the end when Bucky is lost. But with Agent Carter, I just don't feel their relationship at the end so much.
Well, is that because you've seen how it should have ended Captain America?
No.
You really should watch that.
I know, I have seen it. I'm saying okay. It's not because of that. No, I, 'cause
he's not trying very hard.
I know, with this, the first time I saw it, when they're having that heart-to-heart on the radio, and you should be feeling something here, And I'm just not. I mean, they had that one conversation in the bar where they're kind of, you know, getting closer to each other, but yeah.
So you're just not feeling it.
I'm just not feeling it. I'm just not feeling it. I like her, though, and I think that she is good in this part here. I don't ever feel like she's not the character she's playing. You know, like the way I did with Natalie Portman, where I could believe she's a genius, but I couldn't believe she was the absent-minded professor that she was trying to be. I could believe she was a scientist, but I couldn't believe that she was, you know, that scientist.
Well, and I will say I am more interested in seeing the Agent Carter one-shot than I probably am seeing Portman in Thor 2.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason I want to see Portman in Thor 2 is because I want to see Thor 2. And I want to see the Agent Carter thing. I'm so excited about. I'm so excited that I'm really honestly considering, you know, 1201 at Walmart just being there for when they put Iron Man 3 on the shelf. Because I want to see that Agent Carter one shot. Now, that's, again, like I said last episode, if I had the opportunity to be there at San Diego, I would have watched it. But...
Well, and that was one thing. It sounded like they were still giving out tickets right before the show.
Yeah, they... People aren't as excited about Agent Carter as they were about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I wonder why, but... But I am excited about Agent Carter, and I want to see more from her. And I'm kind of... I'm hoping that Winter Soldier has flashbacks to World War II, so we can see Agent Carter in action in the movie as well.
Well, and I do believe she's in the cast.
She is in the cast, yes.
So,
but she could be, you know, wearing Diane Lane Man of Steel makeup to look like, you know, she's become the crazy cat lady.
The thing is and I think, again, we keep going to these crossover comics because you're forcing them down me. I swear one of them makes a comment about the fact that Captain America fought in the Pacific too. So that would lead me to believe there's more Captain America stories.
There's so much more Captain America stories. And the way they did the movie, this movie here, they could go back and do those stories anytime and not mess up any of the continuity. Because there were so many missions that they were showing. They don't really tell you how many years, you know, how long was he doing these missions. They don't say. And that's fine, because I wanted... That's the one another disappointment that I had in this movie, was that they went ahead and froze him so he'd be in the present day so he could be in Avengers. I would have loved...
Okay, you understand. He has to be in the Avengers, so you have to freeze him so he can...
No, I absolutely understand that, but I would have loved to have had a couple more movies set in World War II entirely. I'll settle for flashbacks, but I'm just saying that I want more World War II Captain America.
All right. So
that's the main cast.
Yeah, but there's some more cast that I really, really want to talk about.
Okay,
and I'm probably going to come off and comic book nerd rage at some point during this next little piece here.
Okay.
So Bucky and his division gets caught by Hydra and they get captured, and Steve Rogers goes and saves him. And when he saves Bucky, he saves Bucky and a bunch of other guys.
Yes, he does.
And he puts around himself a key group of commandos.
Yes, he does.
There are two that I want to discuss.
Okay.
The first one's Dum Dum Dugan.
Yes.
Neil
McDonough, I don't know.
Who's done great jobs of military roles in the past with Band of Brothers.
Yes.
Where he does a fantastic job.
I know him from Star Trek First Contact and from a TV series called Boomtown. And I loved that show, Boomtown.
So we see him here. Now, the thing about Dugan is he is a prominent S.H.I.E.L.D. agent throughout the history of S.H.I.E.L.D. He is Nick Fury's right-hand man.
But he was a Howling Commando before that.
And he was a Howling Commando. That's his real origin, is as a Howling Commando. And so is the other one that I want to talk about, which is Gabriel Jones.
Okay.
He was also a Howling Commando, And he is, in the comic book universe, a very prominent S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, the left hand of Nick Fury. So we have here two characters that are Nick Fury characters that they connect to Captain America.
But why wouldn't they? I mean, really?
Well, but it works well. And I mean, Dugan is he's an interesting character. I mean, he's got the mustache. He's got the bowler hat.
I love him.
He's got a great actor portraying him who, after this movie, I saw making quotes about the Avengers. So why haven't we seen him in anything?
Because they haven't given us Nick Fury's origin yet. And if Dum Dum Dugan or Gabriel Jones are going to be in anything in the present day, they're going to have to give them some sort of de-aging something or other so that they can, you know, which is what happened in the comics. Because in the comic books, Nick Fury fought in World War II with the Howling Commandos. And that's how he started, was as a war comic. And then in the 60s with James Bond, they brought him, you know, they gave him this kind of super soldier. What is it called? The
Infinity
Serum or something like that, that causes you
Junior's
not to...
Junior's got a little bit in him, too.
Yeah, you don't grow old, basically, or don't grow old as fast. And so Nick Fury, he is still, you know, in his fighting prime decades later. And so are some of the Howling Commandos, like Dum Dum Dugan. Now, Dum Dum Dugan is a favorite character of mine because he was in a comic book series that I loved. Where it was
called the Great Lakes Avengers.
No, I'm going more obscure than that. He was the leader of a S.H.I.E.L.D. task force that was chasing across America Godzilla.
Yes,
which I have.
He's the man who would do it.
Yeah, and so he has his own helicarrier for some of it, and I wanted to see more of Dum Dum Dugan. He's not on the cast list for Winter Soldier. Which is, you know,
a mistake. He wasn't in the Avengers. He's not. We need to bring him back into the fold.
And they have the place to do it with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The whole problem with that is.
And he's done TV.
He's busy, though. He's been a busy guy. So I'm hoping he has some time to take off some time and go ahead and.
He needs to get unbusy.
Well, no, we want him to work. He's a good guy. I like him a lot.
I want him to work in the MCU.
Yeah. But they could bring him in for a couple episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., make the excuse, you know, well, you know, they were trying to reproduce the Super Soldier Serum, and I was a friend of Steve Rogers, so I wanted to, you know, get in on it.
Yeah, easily. Now, the other one, Gabe Jones.
I don't know as much about him.
Now, he's the African-American soldier in the group. And the thing about Gabe Jones that really appeals to me, and I'd love to see them find a way to use him more, is as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, he is usually the one who questions Nick Fury's decisions the most. If Nick thinks is confident about something, or if Jones thinks that maybe Fury's making a foolish choice, it's usually Gabe Jones who kind of raises his hand and says, is that really the right thing to do? So it would be nice to have a character like that who kind of questions Fury at times, especially since we know Fury uses deception and lies.
I'm sad that we're not seeing these characters in Winter Soldier, and part of that makes me wonder, are we going to see much World War II in Winter Soldier?
So. I don't think we're going to see it. Maybe 15 minutes at the most.
So that's the Howling Commandos characters that we care about. How about some cameos? Let's talk about the cameo.
I thought he'd be taller.
That's it. That's the Stan Lee cameo. And it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. It is ridiculous. He plays the stupidest army officer of all time if he really did think that. Because basically we have this joke where they're trying to give Steve Rogers, Captain America, an award for helping, you know, save these people. But, oh, Captain America's not there. Why? Because he's out doing what he's supposed to be doing. And someone else comes out who's in uniform. He's this fat dude who's short. He comes out and he's, you know, he's not here. Blah, blah, blah. And then that's where Stan Lee says, well, I thought he'd be taller. As if the guy bringing the message was, he thought that was Captain America. That makes no sense to me. This is ridiculous. How does he not know that that's not Captain America?
It's not as ridiculous as us thinking he's Hugh Hefner or Larry King.
Actually, I don't think that those are all that ridiculous. Those are kind of believable. I just think it's silly. It's a stupid cameo. It's, of all of his cameos, this is including the one in Trial of the Incredible Hulk from the TV movie with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno. This is the worst Stan Lee cameo of all time, of all the movies. If you can name a worse one to me, then I'll eat my hat.
Stan Lee?
In what?
Isn't it Fantastic Four 2?
No, that's not. That's a great cameo.
He's on the list.
That's a great cameo, because that's actually directly from the comic book.
All right.
He plays the mail carrier in the first one. That's awesome.
Well, that was pretty sweet.
Yeah. If you can think of a worse one, I would do something that I wouldn't want to do.
There you go.
I can't think of anything.
We need to have a poll. What's the worst? And it needs to come out to not be this one.
It will be this one, because this is dumb. It doesn't make any sense. It's not funny. I didn't laugh when I saw it the first time. I didn't laugh when I saw it the last time. I didn't laugh when I saw it in between. It just doesn't. It's just dumb.
So something that is making its first appearance / a cameo in this movie is the Cosmic Cube.
Yes, it is.
So it is, in fact, used by the Red Skull as the power behind all of his weapons.
And it becomes the MacGuffin for this movie. It becomes the MacGuffin for the next movie. And, well, this isn't the first time we've seen it.
Correct.
We saw it at the end of Thor. Right?
I believe we see it in Thor. I don't know if it's at the end.
Well, in the scene, isn't that in the finale scene? The end credits scene? Where they're bringing in, what's his name?
You are correct. You win.
Yeah, this is the object that causes all of our problems for most of our movies.
So you're saying it's the Thanos?
Yeah.
Of phase one.
I think they do a good job with this set of movies and you know, bringing in with Thor. You know, talking about it and using it in Captain America. And then we've seen it a couple times, so we know what it is in Avengers. We don't have to set it up. Or don't have to set it up much. But it's different, though. This is not the Cosmic Cube. This is the Tesseract.
Correct.
So,
because they never have the guts to call it what it is.
The Cosmic Cube. I wonder how much of that is them just saying, oh, that sounds kind of comic booky and stupid. We probably shouldn't do that. Let's find another name. Oh, you know, I was reading A Wrinkle in Time the other day, and they were talking about the Tesseract.
Well, and the thing that's awesome about it is, you know, it is a glimpse into the cosmos for Red Skull.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's probably one of the big questions I walked away with is Red Skull dead, or did he just get transported to hang out with Thanos?
And they could bring him back. I don't think I have read anywhere that they're using Hugo Weaving ever again, but they could bring him back for another movie. I don't think they would. I don't think they would. That doesn't fit the tone of this universe. If it was a comic book, he would have been back 3 issues ago, but not here.
Well, and I will point out, Loki's the only one who seems to come back. So, and that's because Tom Hiddleston is just awesome.
And he'll be the next Doctor Who.
Oh.
He won't be, but...
But he won't.
But he will.
It'd be cool.
It would be cool. And I want to keep saying that just in case he is the next Doctor Who. And then I can be the one who said, I called it. I said Tom Hiddleston.
So another character the shield.
Yeah. Okay. So the shield shows up in the first Iron Man movie. And we're all like, yeah, that's awesome. The shield shows up in this movie, and it's made of the last of vibranium that they have.
The last?
Which vibranium comes from Wakanda, which is where Black Panther comes from. And so that's kind of a nice little thing where they could – that's like the most precious metal in the world, and this small country in Africa has the only supply of it. And so there's some interesting stuff they could do with that if they wanted to. But this is the last of that special metal, and it was made into a shield.
Now, again, Iron Man, Tony Stark has it for leveling purposes, but isn't it frozen at the beginning of this one?
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering, what is it that Iron Man has in Iron Man?
Maybe it's not the hero shield. Maybe it's just the prop shield.
Yeah. Which only makes sense to people who know anything about collectible items or movie making. The hero shield is the close-up one, the one they use in close-ups, and the other ones are the ones that they use when they're actually throwing them and stuff, because there's obviously more than one shield that they're making when they're making this movie. But
ruining the magic.
I'm not the one who said it. You're the one who said it. I'm just explaining it for people who heard you say that, wondering why I thought it was funny. If you have to explain the joke, it's not funny. I know.
It is interesting, though, that we do have a wooden shield that's just a prop. And he continues with the shield when he actually needs a real defensive weapon.
Well, he starts out using a trash can lid very ineffectively. But wimpy Steve Rogers, when he's in the fight, he picks up a trash can lid, holds it up, you know, as a shield against the fists of the bully. The bully just grabs it and throws it. And then he uses a taxi cab door as a shield against a gun, and it has a star in the center of it. And then he has his prop shield for when he's doing all the shows and stuff, which we haven't talked about, his musical shows. But, yeah.
He'll get Hitler yet.
Yeah, so he's got that shield, and that's kind of cool. And then he wants it for his costume for his uniform, rather. And the vibranium absorbs kinetic energy. And so you're able to shoot a bullet at it. You don't even feel it. But I just I'm curious, what is that other shield that Tony Stark has? Was that because Howard Stark was trying to recreate it? And the other thing is, it looks like it's kind of mechanical in Iron Man.
It looks a little worn.
Yeah.
I don't think they want us thinking about it, to be honest.
At this point, they don't. In Iron Man, it was a cute little, hey, let's throw this in there. But, yeah, now we're going into territory where they're like, uh-oh. This is the problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where if they introduce something, you've already introduced it, and now you're going to try and use it in the movie. Oh, Luke Cage and Iron Fist, we had them in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and now we want to make a movie about them, but they don't look as cool as you'd want for a movie. What are we going to do? So, fortunately, with a shield, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, we survive. It's just us nitpicking about
it. It's okay.
17 minutes.
Yeah. Hey, so let's talk about the traveling show for U.S. war bonds that Steve Rogers goes on after he's become the super soldier.
Well, it was good to see him do something towards the war effort.
Yeah, it was a very interesting choice, and I wonder if that whole sequence came about just to put him in a ridiculous-looking flag costume and have it make sense so that when... I mean, that's the whole reason for that whole segment. It's a great segment, that montage of him going from city to city, punching Hitler in the jaw, and he has his own comic book, and it's the cover to Captain America #1.
And his trading cards.
And the trading cards and the movies, which gives Red Skull a great line where, I've seen all your movies. I'm a big fan. You know, it's a great line.
Yeah.
But that whole sequence comes out of them trying to make sense out of why he's wearing a ridiculous comic book costume. I like that. I don't know what you think about it, but
I was amused by it. And I didn't really have issues with it. I didn't question it. I thought it was a good set.
So let's move to, oh, the final battle.
The final battle. Boom, boom. Sorry.
Yeah. I forgive you. Let's talk about the final battle. What do you want to talk about with the final battle?
Steve didn't try very hard to stay alive. I'm sorry. I did after watching how it should have ended Captain America, this whole end sequence just completely changed for me. It's no longer as believable because as you're watching it and he's like, well, there's aircraft here and I even flew one. And I could do this, and I could do that. It's like, really, you're just not trying.
I'm going to say this. I like the How It Should Have Ended videos. They're funny, but they're not perfect.
But I think that this is one that actually points out a flaw in the story.
No, I
mean, there are little tiny airplanes there. He flew one.
Yes, right? Yes. And I understand that. This is actually, I'm not going to go so far as to say this is a flaw in the movie, but it's another change to the original mythology that I have a problem with. You know, with the original, it's missiles and it's, you know, have you seen the 1989 movie?
No, but you never know next summer.
Well, it might even be earlier than that if we're going to be filling in between now and the, you know, September 24th, but it's a movie that you will eventually need to see. And they do this ridiculously. Now, mind you, it's the first one third of the movie takes place in World War II, and they put him on a missile that's headed from, I believe it's from Germany, all the way to Washington, D.C. But before it hits Washington, D.C., he's like on the missile trying to make it, you know, fly up instead of down, and it doesn't hit Washington, D.C. Instead, it goes to Alaska. It's a pretty magical missile. You've got to see it to believe it. Anyway, that's closer to the original origin of Steve Rogers getting frozen. I understand what they're doing, though. He has to pilot it so it doesn't hit in a unpopular, or it doesn't hit a populated area, and so he's going to take it somewhere. He's got to control it. You know, you can't trust it to a stick to hold the joystick in place or whatever. The How It Should Have Ended videos don't always work because it just means you don't get the good story. This is a situation where it's weak. It's probably the weakest part of the movie. But I go with it because I've gone with the rest of the movie to this point. Are you going with it?
I'm going to go with it.
Are you sure you're going to go with it? You don't sound very enthusiastic about going with it.
But I'll go with it.
Because they have to freeze him.
They do. They have to make him a capsicle.
Yeah. Oh, that's a dumb line. Anyway. So they make him a capsicle. The whole sequence is exciting. You know, and there's bombs, and then there's, you know, shooting, and there's windows getting crashed.
Aircraft.
And yeah, it's an exciting sequence. The first time I watched it, I remember just on the edge of my seat wondering what's going to happen next. I really had no idea where this movie was going, and because I knew he was going to get frozen at some point, and I didn't know where, and it was interesting, it was fun, and it was exciting. Now I'm watching it, and it's still exciting. It's just, you know what's going to happen. So, yeah. So then he gets frozen, and we flash forward.
Dun, dun, dun!
It's the present day, but we don't know it yet because he's in a hospital room.
And it looks like it should be World War II.
And
Ben's hopes are like, maybe he didn't get frozen this time. Maybe it'll be in the next movie.
Honestly, at first I did. At first, I was wondering, oh, what is going on here? But no. I love the way he figures it out, though. Because they're playing a baseball game on the radio that he's actually seen. He saw it in person.
I was at that game. I'm going to be honest. I've been to quite a few baseball games. I doubt that I can identify that I was at that game.
if you were really into baseball and you knew the stats,
really into baseball, man.
Yeah, but you weren't into baseball in the 40s.
I mean, I guess.
I don't know.
I was listening to a game, and it was supposed to be today, and it was like the 1989 lineup. I would catch that.
Yeah.
But
you'd catch that anyway. Yeah, they got they were off. Someone miscalculated. And he goes running, and Nick Fury comes, and we're getting ready for the Avengers.
Bum, bum, bum.
He's a man out of time.
And that's exactly where we're set up.
Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. I just wish it was World War II more. But I'm okay being here now.
But again, there's still got to be some World War II story. I mean, when you look at the Captain America of the comic books, you do. You've got Pacifics. You have stories all over the world, including the Pacific. And really, all we see here is a fight against Hydra. And you make a good point. They don't tell you what the time span is. Maybe he was fighting against Hydra for a while, and then he had to go fight Baron Zemo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There could be gaps in there. I just don't necessarily know if we'll see them on the screen ever. Maybe in these crossover comics, but crossover comics, you know, they have their ups and downs.
In that Captain America one, which I do say is one of the strongest of the whole bunch, it is another adventure in World War II. And it's you're following Captain America in the current adventure in World War II, and then you see flashbacks to how Howard Stark got involved and how it's good. I like it.
But let's be honest. You know, Joss probably, you know, he's announced Age of Ultron. So this is a good time for him to introduce a character like Baron Zemo, who's completely unrelated to Ultron. And what we could do is we could definitely have more World War II settings so that we could introduce Zemo before we move him forward to our world.
Yeah, and honestly, you could even do some of that with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't think they're going to, but...
No.
Again, though, you could have a flashback, you know, bring in Dum Dum Dugan again, you know, to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and have a flashback to, you know, whatever. But to Dum Dum Dugan doing some mission with Captain America, and I don't know if you'd get Chris Evans or if you'd just have a body double, but yeah. So next on the outline... Well, next on the outline takes us out of this conversation. So anything else to say about Captain America?
You know, Captain America, it's not as high up there for me as the Iron Man 1 and 2. Not as high as the Avengers, but I probably do put it above Thor. Definitely above the Hulk.
Yeah, and this is another situation where you've got a bunch of good movies. And so how are you going to compare them? I put this high up there for me, though. This goes up there. I don't know where I would put it right away.
I will say I watched this over the 4th of July weekend, and it was a perfect 4th of July movie.
I think I'll be watching it next 4th of July, too. My son and I watched this, and we watched the episode of Star Trek where they end up on the planet where they have the Declaration of Independence, but they have all the words just mashed together, and they don't have the meanings of the words. They just have the writings. It's two great 4th of July viewings for geeks. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Ben,
yes.
You got a piece of feedback.
Okay.
And I'm going to go ahead and use some of this from Lester T. Jester.
Okay.
Because Lester and I, we're buddies. I don't know if you'll like Lester.
What?
Let's talk about
Hawkeye's
cameo in Thor.
Oh, don't talk about it.
This is Lester's words. I say the cameo in respect to comic book cameos, and this is very much in the same flair as the source material. He's cast in shadow the whole time, and you don't get to see him do anything, but that you know he's there. This is different from Black Widow's first appearance in Iron Man 2, but more like Nick Fury in Iron Man. You know, when you think about comic books, I know that they've got Trinity War going on in DC where they had Pandora and all the issue number ones.
Mm-hmm.
He's 100% right. It's a very comic book sort of way to intro a character where you just see the shadow or you just see an impression in the background, but you don't necessarily have that person in the action.
Okay. Have you read the entire comment? Or
I've read the entire comment, okay. Yes.
I wasn't sure if you were stopping in the middle or if you were...
stop there. And we're probably not going to read it all here because it's all good stuff. But I did want to point that out to you, that he's got a solid point about that Hawkeye.
He does...
Yes, he does.
Lester, I'm sure you're a really super guy, all right? But I have to really disagree with you. It would be one thing if he stayed in the shadows. That would be one thing. I can't go with it. I can't go with it. Because Nick Fury... He shows up at the end of Iron Man, and he does Nick Fury. You see him, you know exactly who he is. He's in charge. He's large. He is part of this S.H.I.E.L.D. thing. You get an idea of who he is. So when he shows up next time, you know who you just saw. Black Widow, when she shows up next time, you know exactly what she can do. And when she is on that chair in Avengers, you're waiting for her to do what she's going to do. And with Hawkeye, they just needed to show him doing his skill once. Because when he shows up at the beginning of Avengers, you still have no idea what he's capable of unless you have read the comics. And that's why the cameo doesn't work. The cameo, keep him in shadow, that's fine. But he has to do what he does at least once. And... you have to see his skill once. Why is he worthy of being in the Avengers? Based on that one scene, he's not. That's all I'm saying. I agree with you about classic comic book cameos. I agree with you about keeping them in shadow, showing just their foot, and then maybe their glove and that kind of thing. I agree with you there. But I just can't agree that this is a good cameo. I just can't.
I'm going to go on because you're wrong. Lester, like me, loves Iron Man 2. But here's something I want your opinion of.
Okay.
So he's gone through in this comment and he's kind of broken down. He's trying to point out that these movies vary wildly in the type of movie they are.
Yeah.
So he has phase one as Iron Man industrial espionage sci-fi, Incredible Hulk, Monster on the Run.
Okay.
Thor, high fantasy.
Definitely, yeah.
Captain America, World War II period piece.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's breaking down phase two as Iron Man being more sci-fi espionage.
Okay.
Iron Man 3. Thor Dark World, high fantasy. Captain America, the Winter Soldier, military espionage. Guardians of the Galaxy, space saga.
Space opera, yeah.
Yeah, so we're all over the place when you look at these different movies. And then he's predicting for the future that... Avengers 2 will be high concept, which he predicted that before Ultron was thrown in there. So I don't know.
It's interesting because I did see an interview with Joss Whedon where he actually gave a straight answer. With Avengers, he was making a war movie. That was his thing. Was when they came to him about Avengers, he said, "Well, can I make it a war movie?" And they said, "You can do whatever." And yeah, so Avengers, you have a war movie. It's superheroes fantasy, but it's a war movie.
And then Ant-Man is grounded sci-fi. So, I mean, when you look at this, he's right. They are all over the place on the types of movies that they're making. And maybe that's one of the reasons why they're so successful is because they're not just using one set of cliches. They're using all the cliches when making these movies.
Yeah. Because with Guardians of the Galaxy, I'm expecting it to be like a Star Wars-esque kind of thing. And with Winter Soldier, yeah, I'm expecting it to... have elements of like James Bond and
yeah, it's going to be stressful. It's going to be where's the deception? Who's going to die? Yeah,
yeah. No, I think that Lester, I can totally. I'm with you there. I just can't on Hawkeye.
Someday Lester will make this fool believe. I mean,
just call me a fool.
I mean, okay, man. You're free to have your opinion.
All right.
And I believe we also have a piece of voicemail.
We do. We have one more piece of feedback. It's some voicemail from someone who called me on my cell phone.
before I had it set up correctly to just go straight to voicemail with our special phone number. So should I play it?
Let's play it.
All right.
Level 7 access required. Agent Butcher reporting from the field. I have just taken in the Iron Man suit up exhibit sponsored by Stark Industries at Interventions in Tomorrowland at the Disneyland Resort. I have seen the 7 suits of armor, including the Mark 1, the Mark 2, the Mark 3. You get the idea. And I virtually suited up. I was able to use the repulsors to shoot targets and to fly around the garage. Oh, yeah. I went from just feeling like I was just a regular agent to being a superhero. I have to be honest, Interventions is something that I haven't ever entered in the last 4 years, and so the only reason I did enter it today was for the Iron Man exhibit. And it was pretty okay. It was fine. It was good. It wasn't the most spectacular thing in the world. It was just a little bit of a corner of Interventions where I could have stand it for it to be the entire top floor. I had fun. I enjoyed myself. And I have not yet decided if I'll go back to Interventions just for Iron Man. But I do hope that it lasts for more than just this summer, which is what it's currently scheduled for. I was feeling good about the fact that there was a survey lady out front after we left asking us questions about the Iron Man experience. So hopefully there'll be more in the future. Be safe out there, agents. Agent Butcher signing off.
So have you had a chance to think about it much since then? Since you were actually there
I have in the moment? I have thought about it more. The ironic thing is I had never gone into Innovations before in the 4 trips that we've made to Disneyland. And I actually went in twice. And the second time we went in, it was because my wife asked to go see it again. I think that it really does show the power that Marvel properties could have in Disney parks for something that really, to be honest, is clearly a temporary exhibit. It's way too small. It's a building that's meant to rotate, and because of the Iron Man exhibit, it can't rotate at the moment because it would mess everything up because they're actually lining things up against the wall. I think it was a good addition for Disneyland. I just would like to see more of it because this one's not going to be there for very long. I think it'll be gone before. I'd like to see them extend it past September, but I think it would be gone before the beginning of the next year. So
do you think they're going to what do you see them doing in the future then Disney with the Marvel stuff?
One of the rumors that has been going around is that the building that currently has this Iron Man exhibit in Tomorrowland at Innoventions, it's got a lot of educational things in it. So one of the rumors has been nobody goes in there because it's too educational. Let's bulldoze it and put an Iron Man roller coaster there. And that's been a really big rumor. And to be honest, we could hear at D23 that maybe that's what they're going to do is demo that building that's been there since the 60s and put a new roller coaster there. Another rumor about that building, again, is if you want to highlight industry and future technology, put Stark Expo there, which would also be a real good fit. The thing about tomorrow, I could see the complaint where somebody could say, well, it's not going to fit in Tomorrowland because you've got Pixar properties and you got Star Wars properties also out there in Tomorrowland. The thing is Tomorrowland's such a mishmash. It's not going to feel that weird. I shouldn't say that. It's not going to feel weirder than it already does because you already have a mishmash of things there between cartoons and Star Wars. So I think putting something Marvel in Disneyland's Tomorrowland especially would be a great idea.
It was cool to get on the ground there in the moment. Yep. I like that. And someone using our voicemail, even if it was one of us.
So, Ben, how does somebody get a hold of you?
Well, you can get a hold of me by going to Facebook, where you go to facebook.com/Ben Avery Storyteller. You can go to my website, benavery.com, and I'm Whispering Loon on Twitter. So that's where you can get a hold of me. What about you?
I'm basically everything between Disney. So at Between Disney on Twitter, facebook.com/Between Disney, and betweendisney.com. And how do they get a hold of us together?
Us together? Well, you would go to welcome to level7.com. That's our website where we post reviews and, you know, videos that we find interesting about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's a Marvel Cinematic Universe related blog, and it's also where our, you know, RSS feeds and stuff are there. facebook.com/welcome to level7. Twitter, we are level7pod. And then finally, you can call our voicemail. It's 7755, the word level, the number 7. That's 1-7755, the word level, 7. 7755, level 7.
And again, sadly, if you want to get a hold of Ben directly, you may no longer use that number straight to his cell phone.
It did cause some confusing things to happen while I was trying to answer it, and people weren't expecting it to be answered, people being Daniel. So... we are also
on my way to go pick up an R2-D2 lunch pail.
We're also on Google Plus and iTunes. And if you would want to, you know, put a good review up on iTunes about Welcome to Level 7, that would help us to, you know, get some good standing before the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. starts, so that we could, you know, have a little bit of a following is the right word, but... again, we want you to join the conversation, and that's why we're doing this, is to have people converse with us about Marvel movies and TV now.
Let's be honest, I'm completely selfish here.
Okay.
I want to talk to Clark Gregg, and the only way that's going to happen is if we've got a force behind us that can make the man talk to us. So,
yeah.
Tell your friends and relatives, because we need to start a movement. So I, Daniel Butcher, can talk to Clark Gregg.
Okay. I'm not going to say it's not possible. I'm just going to say it's probably not possible. How's that?
I believe. Coulson lives.
He does live. He does.
Ben, do you have anything else to say?
I do. I just want to say this as my final words here, just to make sure that everyone's clear. Fondue is just cheese and bread, my friend.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-7755, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553-8357. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. 7 is spelled out. Follow us on Twitter, where we are level7pod. 7 is spelled out. Or email us directly, feedback@welcometolevel7.com. 7 is spelled out. Visit our website, welcometolevel7.com, for news, reviews, and links to our RSS feeds. Our theme music is The Light Fantastic by J.S. Earls, jserls.bandcamp.com. And again, thanks for listening.
It seems like a freak accident. Bucky's death is getting Boba Fetted to me, where you have a character of significance who kind of has this quick death. So this, you know, he's off quick, you know?
Yeah. Daniel, it's Boba Fett.
Dude. I'll pronounce my Star Wars characters however I want to.
It's not your Star Wars character. It's Joe Johnston's Star Wars character.
Hey, if George Lucas could decide how to pronounce it, then I'll decide. Okay. But as long as Hoth and Hoth are both out there, I'm good.
Hoth isn't out there.
Oh,
what are you talking about?
Dude, he's been quoted as saying Hoth and Hoth.
Oh, I don't care. It's Boba Fett. Ugh. Okay, back on track.
And you better not cut that out.
I'm not cutting it out. I am not cutting that out. I'm cutting out as little as possible when it comes to editing these. You make it easy to edit because there's not much to cut. So not much fat, just lots of lean, except for when we got on these rabbit trails. So
we'd never do that.
Never. Okay, so where were we?
So we got Bucky.
Yeah,
Bucky
let's.